The Fed's out of options. Rate cuts, money printing, balance sheet reversals. They call it policy, but it's really panic. This is in-game economics, where hope replaces discipline and the illusion of control finally breaks. They're not cutting rates because things are strong. They're cutting because the system is cracking. Inflation's eating savings. The labor market's stalling. Confidence in the dollar is fading fast. For decades, the Fed built a house of paper. Now they're striking the match that could burn it all down, leaving you to pay the price. When's the last time you actually held the wealth you've spent your life working for? My friends at Noble Gold Investments have been helping Americans move from paper wealth into real tangible assets. Numbers on a screen can disappear, but physical gold and silver, they've outlasted every crisis in history. Visit NobleGoldInvestments.com and get your free wealth protection kit today. That's NobleGoldInvestments.com for your free wealth protection kit. Discover how simple it is to protect your future.
Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals, including gold, involves risks. Consult with your tax attorney or financial professional before making an investment decision.
What's poppin', everybody? Hello and welcome to Popcorn Culture. My name is Ben Carlin and I am your host. Here with me today is my brother Jay, who will be in every episode.
That's right. And if you'd rather hear me introduce the show rather than Ben, actually, I mean, you can change that on Patreon, but also you could check out our other podcasts through the Gryffindor, or you could check out Through the Griffin Tour, our live show, which tickets are on sale for now.
Yes, indeed. We are going back to the Northeast. I'm really excited about this. It's like the first time like we're ever like circling back to an area that we've already traveled to.
That is true.
And there's like a big part of me that's like, are we going to see familiar faces? Are we going to be like, have we met you before here?
Here?
I know. So anyway, we're going to Boston, Hartford, New York City, Philadelphia, Washington, D.C., and Richmond, Virginia. It's going to be taking place in the month of September, I believe, from September 9th through the 18th, somewhere in that zip code of range of dates.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a lot of fun. So we're going to have links to all that in the show notes, or you can go to supercarlinbrothers.com/events to get access to all of those. They are selling quickly, which is very exciting.
I know. It's very fun. Very fun. Is this, how many shows have we done in DC now? Because we did, I mean, like back in, like we did our first ever like movie meetup in DC.
Right? It's so interesting to think back about doing those particular events, I guess, because it was like they really were meetups more than they were like
shows. Yeah.
Because what we would do is we would like book an entire movie theater, and then like we would go out, we would say hello to everybody, but like we would buy all the tickets, and then, you know, people could buy tickets from us, and that would include the movie ticket itself,
right?
So like we had like purchased out the theater or whatever, so then we would all go and see like The Incredibles 2 or Frozen 2 or The Lion King, or what else did we do? We did a good few of these.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, it was such an interesting event, and then we would literally go through a new meet and greet with just every single person, and it was such a blast. It was like fascinating to meet everybody. But yeah, I think we did DC twice.
We did DC twice.
Because we did the Spartan race. The first ever time that we did this, we woke up, did a Spartan race.
Yep.
And then we did the entire event.
The entire event, yes. Yeah. And man, that was a huge energy day.
It was. I mean, that was like as long as possible. And I still feel like by the end of it, my memory might not even fully have like an accurate recollection, because part of me thinks that I couldn't sleep at the end of the day because I was so fired up. And then the other part of me is like, or did I fall asleep on the drive home?
Just immediately.
Yeah, it was one or the other, you know?
Yeah.
I was either exhausted or awake.
Or yeah, one of those two.
Right.
Yeah, so we did it twice there, and then we did a show there for Through the Griffin Tour on the first run.
Yes, we did.
So this is gonna be our fourth show in DC.
Wow. How about that?
Crazy. Who'd have thought? It's basically like our home field at this point.
It is it's funny you say that too, because we have Richmond, Virginia on there, which is like 3 hours from Roanoke.
Yeah, which is closer.
So it's gonna be a lot of fun to pop in there. The thing that I think is gonna be really cool about that is that we'll drive like 12 hours from home, I think, like as far like once we get to like Boston. And then our very last show is like 3 hours from home. So like we'll wake up the next morning and we'll be like, hey, like we'll be home by like noon.
We'll just be home. Yeah. We'll just be home, man. It's going to be great. Yeah.
Oh man. It's going to be excellent. So anyway, we hope to see you guys there. It's going to be an absolute blast. It really is like one of the coolest things. One of the hardest things about being a content creator is not getting to go spend time with the people who are like actively part of your community, and then getting out there to realize how much like impact is actually happening.
Yeah.
I feel like the phrase I say all the time, or I used to tell people all the time when I was like really struggling, was like, it's hard to feel like I'm making the world a better place, like one Harry Potter theory at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And then you meet people and you're like, okay, maybe it's not the Harry Potter of it all. It's like the
community of it all.
It's the community. It may be like a layer of like reliability. It's like company. And you know, it's interesting too, because like over the past several years, I have like found YouTube more myself, which is odd that like we do this and it's never really been like a like a part of my DNA.
Right.
But yeah, like between like the Outdoor Boys or who is my Diablo 2 streamer
Llama,
Mr. Llama,
Mr. FC. Llama.
Yeah. It's just like, you know, and it's so funny too, because like he'll do like 4-hour playthroughs and I'll watch it over the course of like, you know, 2 weeks.
Right. And you're like, I was gonna get. Yeah.
Right, yeah, exactly. But it's like, I can't believe I'm watching a 4-hour episode of content.
Right.
Yeah.
That's so fun.
It's very fun. So
look at you discovering YouTube in 2026.
I know, and I don't want to say I'm an early adopter, but you know,
yeah.
Like, you know, just I try to catch things before they really become like mainstream.
Of course, popular. Yeah, right, yeah.
All right, Jay. Here's a loaded question for you.
Okay,
what's one thing you would change about yourself?
Oh, you mean from last week?
Yeah. Last week or 2 weeks ago. I don't even remember when we asked this question. But
yeah.
I think that we had like a back and forth and I never spat it back at you. And so
right.
I've been thinking about it ever since.
What's one thing I wish I could stop doing?
Well, I mean, I did. That's not the way I phrased
That's
it.
That's not the way you phrased it. That's how I phrased it to you.
Oh, okay. What's one thing I could stop doing? Okay.
Yeah.
But Jay, what's one thing you wish you could stop doing?
Oh, man. Like scrolling on my phone for sure.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah.
The old daily screen time.
The
usage.
Only daily screen time. Yeah. It's just like, I know it's not good for me, and I will just like open Instagram and scroll, and then I'll like close it, and then I'll just immediately reopen it, and I'm like, what is going on? Like, I hate that my brain is programmed this way at the moment, and I do wish I could just do it less, because one, I know it's bad for me, and two, I feel like it's not such a bad example if your kids just constantly look up and see you on your phone, and I don't like that either. So I feel like my one strategy I've come up with for this, which sounds silly, but I feel like the kids will have fun with it, is, and I haven't started it yet, but I'm going to tell the kids that anytime they see me on my phone, they can tell me that I have to do like 10 squats and get off my phone, and I'll just have to do it. And I'll just like listen to them.
I love that.
Do it.
Yeah.
And just be like, nope, you're right. Boom. Okay. Put it down. Do like, and then also, I feel like that's also a good way to just like, if I feel the urge to be like, nope, don't do it. Now you have to do 10 squats. Too bad. That's your punishment or whatever. Because in the meantime, then it's like, hey, you did like a tiny exercise or whatever.
Right. Like you've programmed like little cheat codes into your life to have like little wafts.
Yeah.
Like an exercising snack.
Yeah. Something, you know? Like that. Yeah. It's just like, let's retrain the dopamine to be like exercise based instead.
Yeah.
Or something. Yeah.
It's a hard one to overcome. And I remember, I think the thing that finally like tipped me over the edge was exactly what you just described, because it was like because on Instagram, like I was following like, I don't even know, like 200 people or something.
So right.
Like, my feed wasn't even very interesting.
Right.
Most of the time. I would say the hardest thing about it is almost like because it's so widely adopted, I feel like I will go and like interact with friends who I haven't seen for like a period of time. And it almost feels like I have failed them by, and to be clear, I don't actually feel that they feel that way, but like, I don't know what's been going on in their life, basically.
Right.
So like, you know, we have like a buddy who has like, you know, 3 kids, and it's like, I think we were having lunch with him the other day, and he was talking about how like one of them was like 10 years old or whatever, and I was like, 10?
Right.
Like, you know, because I'm stuck in like 4 years ago time.
Right.
And so like, I think of like this child as still being like a kindergartner, not like a up and coming middle schooler.
Right.
You know, it's like, wait, what? You know, how did that happen?
Right.
So it's like you can feel oddly out of the loop because you don't know more. But then at the same rate, like if you were to go back to like pre-social media times, it feels like these are the kinds of subjects that like if you went and sat down with an old friend, it's like, pull out the wallet, show me the photos. Like, how old are they now? Wow. What are they into?
Right.
Like, you know, it would feel it, like, but in the meantime, it almost feels like when you go to like sit with a friend, it's supposed to be like, I saw the post. How about that? Hitting his first home run, you know, like, like it feels like you're supposed to go and already know the news
right
before they tell you the news. Does that make sense?
It does, but counterpoint.
Okay, counterpoint.
I would dare say it wouldn't make a difference because like of the people I follow on Instagram, like almost none of the people I know in real life post that much on social media.
Oh, well, fair enough.
A tremendous amount of what I see is just from like the wider world, not people I specifically know.
Okay.
So if the friend you're talking about, like, had you been on social media, I don't think you'd have been any more equipped to like discuss their children.
Well, that's a good point. Yeah. I mean, and all I could say is fair enough.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, but because I don't know like if they are or are not posting.
Right.
But even like the obligatory, like it's the first day of school and here's them, like, you know, both kids holding up a sign that says, you know, I'm so-and-so, I'm 6 years old, and when I grow up, I want to be an astronaut. You
right.
know, it's like even those like little things kind of like give you some glimpse into what must be like resonating with that person.
Sure.
And that's the kind of post that I feel like does make it up, or like the annual Christmas card photo shoot where you actually all put on nice outfits and went out to a farm at sunset and you're backlit and, you know, there's
right.
a meadow of hay behind you and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. You know, look how curated we are.
Yeah. We're so great.
So here's another one. So like this is in some like way, shape or form our job. And if anything, on Instagram, I would say this was like one of the areas, or even on the pop, are the areas where it's least true. But like, do you think if you were just out there in the world, do you think you would have like a brand?
If what, like if
you were just like out there in the world and like more like casually using social platforms, I guess, would you have a brand?
Like, would I be trying to curate like my feeds or something?
Not necessarily curate so that like if you were to go to the grid, it's like, you know, every fourth post is a quote and that way it makes a cute diamond structure so that like the middle right. post is like a picture and then you go down one and it's a quote and then on either side, you know, it's
right.
like, not like that. But like, do you think it would be like, okay, I'm an adventurer, so like I'm going to only post photos that sort of show like my more adventurous lifestyle or
mm-hmm,
something?
Mm-hmm. I suspect I would post like a lot of like just family stuff.
Yeah, right. Yes. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure that would make a lot of sense.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard for our family lives not to be like the very core of who we are when we're not sitting in these chairs.
Yes. Yeah. So,
which is a good thing.
Yes. I agree with you. It is a good thing. I feel like that's probably what I would post a lot of. Like, as ever, I feel like I'm in like a lot of times on my own Instagram, I feel like I'm such in like a weird limbo where I'm like, should I post more just like family stuff, or should I post more of like SCB adjacent stuff, or both, or does anyone care? I'm definitely overthinking it, you know?
Right. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. It's a good point. And I feel like, you know, back in the day, but like the pre-pop days, it was almost like, to me, I felt like the Instagram was a great way for people to know who I was, like, away from the desk,
right,
so to speak.
Yeah.
You know, like where it's sort of like, this is, you know, there's like the version of us that like sits down and records all this stuff, but then like if you want to know like what we do in like our free time, or like, you know, mountain biking or splitting wood or camping,
right,
or something, you know, it's like oh yeah, like, okay, there's different layers to the onion, but you know, the one that we see is pretty consistently, hey brother,
right,
you know, like that guy,
right.
Yeah.
That guy.
Right. But I feel like the pop also like is tremendous opportunity for this.
Yeah.
Which, you know, that was another one I was thinking about the other day, was we used to do a gaming channel, which like featured, well, I say we used to do a gaming channel. We still have a gaming channel. But back in the day, we used to do like this Mario Kart roulette, or we would do like Super Smash Brothers or whatever. And a lot of what that was us sitting down for gameplay, and we would be like answering viewer questions
right.
all the while we played. And at the time, I was always sort of like, we're making gaming content where we happen to be talking. But when I look back on it, I'm like, no, we were basically doing a podcast while also playing a video game.
Right. I think so.
You know, because we were talking much more like broad strokes, life type stuff. It wasn't like we were like, okay, so in Mario Kart, you need to use like this back alleyway because it's a cut through that, spits you out right here. And then, you know, you get primed for a mystery block or whatever. You
right.
know, like, you know, or you can avoid a blue shell this way or something.
Yeah.
Can you avoid a blue shell?
It depends on the game. In like the Mario Kart Wii, you could, if you like hit a mushroom right as it was coming down on you, but then in Mario Kart 8, you could not. And actually I'm not sure about the Mario Kart like world circuit or whatever.
And what about like the little like Sonic boom box?
Oh yes. The boom box will break the blue shell.
Oh, it will.
Yeah.
Okay. So if you're in front and you've got a boom box.
Yeah. Hold just hold it. Yeah.
Okay. Absolutely. Got it. Mm-hmm. Okay. Good to know. Good to know. But, you know, it was interesting because it's going to lead me into a different little pathway here, which is like I was calling it Youth's Handholds.
Youth's Handholds. Okay. Yes.
And it's going to like comb together a couple of different topics that I feel like are on my mind at the moment. One of which is this idea or this buzzword that I feel like I keep coming back to, which is like worldview.
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel like there's like a lot of like worldview shattering things that are happening at the moment, just like out in the greater wide world.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like one of these things where like if you've been raised and the people that you look up to and all that type of thing are like your mentors or the people who have like guided your moral compass or whatever, all of a sudden are starting to be like questioned or you know, like even like maybe like the polarity of, you know, political topics and stuff like that. It's like if it votes one way or the other way, you know, there's roughly 50% of the populace who are kind of like, well, this just shattered the way that like everyone I know views the world.
Right.
Which can make you feel like you're in like some amount of like a free fall, which I feel like is where like a lot of the discontent is coming from. Like nobody wants to feel like they're in a free fall.
No, definitely not.
You know, so it's like I think everybody's like fighting really hard to be like, well, I don't want to be the one to free fall. So, you know, if it's not me, then it has to be you.
Right.
But even that feels like it's like a very non-communal perspective to how the world should work. And part of me almost like wonders if like your worldview isn't like in some way, shape or form as important or maybe just synonymous with your culture or your religion or any of those other things. Like to take like a cornerstone of the way that people view the world and sort of have it like broken down.
Right.
It's like, should we be more courteous towards to all people about the importance of this thing? You know, because I think if we could elevate that, it might make us more respectful in our discussions, more open to the way in which we communicate.
Okay.
Because it would be less, well, in a world where this was adopted, it was sort of like, okay, like you can't go and just like deconstruct somebody's worldview without offering them a way to rebuild it.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially, because if you go through and you take a cornerstone of somebody's like entire perspective away from them, it's going to really harm how they go about the world.
Sure.
So it's like in a way, it's like that's a sacred thing.
Yeah. So I'm sorry. Let me just back up. That you think we should be like more respectful of people's like religious worldviews?
Not necessarily religious. I think that like a worldview could encapsulate religion or culture or any of those types of things.
I would say almost predominantly it does.
Almost predominantly that religion is a cornerstone of people's worldviews.
Yes.
Yeah. No, I would agree with that. Yeah. So I'm saying that like in some cases, worldview would include those things. And in other cases, I don't think it absolutely must.
Right. Okay.
You know, so like for the people who that is like a vital importance to them, or if their culture is of vital importance to them, then it's absolutely a part of the world.
Sure. Culture is an odd one because it's like it's vitally important to you whether you think it is or not, you know.
Yes, absolutely.
Like you're a part of it like out of your own control.
You're a part of it Yes. Yeah. Right. Yes. And there are probably like certain things, you know, like I'm reading like Project Hail Mary again right now because I can't manage to get to the theater or whatever. But like, it's interesting, like, you know, they, Ryland, the main character and his like counterpart have this like rule, which is that like, if you use the C word, if you use culture,
right,
it's sort of like a surefire way to like respect each other's like approach to something. It's like,
right,
that doesn't make sense, but I'm using the C word, and because I'm using the C word, like, it's like, okay, I respect it,
right?
Like, you know, it's like I am not it's like an right. agreed upon thing, and it's easy between two
alien races.
Yeah, it's easy with it when there are two parties involved, like, and they are singular individuals
and know nothing about each other
exactly, right. Yes. You know, because there it could very well be the case that like even something that like, you know, Ryland, who's like the main astronaut, you know, subject of the story, it's like there could be plenty of people back on Earth who disagree with the thing he's claiming as culture.
Exactly.
You know, which we know is true because we live in a world that has a multitude of cultures.
Yeah.
So I guess what I'm trying to say is that like when we have discourse as a society, the idea would almost be like, let's elevate how much we all value our worldview. And if you are going to attack or like question somebody else's worldview, it needs to be in such a way that also offers a scaffolding for rebuilding what you're attempting to like take from how they interpret the world.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Right. It's like, you can't come at someone with like just a hammer because it is not similar to yours. You also have to like have the like the materials for the bridge or whatever.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. And I think that that's like one of those things where it's like, you know, like an improv, for example. I think you and I have talked about this before. There's like a rule, which is yes and.
Right.
So like if you know, you're setting a scene or whatever and you're trying to establish it so that there's an alien invasion, but the person that you're, you know, alongside is like, and we opened an ice cream stand, it's sort of like, yeah, we did, absolutely, right. And we're serving, you know, termite covered ice cream, you know, and it's like, then the other person might be like, termite, okay,
right, and a delicacy,
yeah, indeed, yes, you know, and it's like one of those things where you need to to go with the flow or whatever.
Right.
You know, and so it's almost like the unwritten rule here would almost sort of be like, if you're going to dismantle, you need to rebuild.
Right.
Like, you know, so you need to know, not just know your way is wrong, but also like I understand how you got there. Let's look at this additional information and let's figure out like how to go back, mm-hmm. or whatever. And I guess like in some way, I think that that's where it's like, if you're just going to take the hammer to their worldview, nobody's ever going to accept that because you're essentially suggesting to them, no, you have to go in free fall, not me,
mm-hmm.
which is sort of like, if you're both standing on the edge of a cliff, it's sort of like shoving them.
Right.
You know,
right.
Like, it's like, well, one of us was going to fall.
Right.
That's that.
Right. Yeah. Doesn't need to be that way.
Yes. Yes. So then going back to the conversation about like gaming and our early conversations and stuff like that, and what I'm referring to as youth's handholds.
Yeah.
Is sort of like, I think when you're entering, I'm saying youth, but it's actually early adulthood. I think like when you're entering early adulthood, and maybe this is like me speaking a little bit from like my own personal experience, which only goes so far, but it was sort of like, you know, elementary school, high school, or middle school, high school, college, graduation, and then like enter, air quotes, the real world.
Right.
You know, and so what's interesting about that is that it means that like the age of 22 is almost like the training wheels come off.
Right.
You know, and all of a sudden you're looking for ways to feel more secure in the world that you live in.
Right.
You know, when you're looking for these handholds, you're looking for something stable.
Right. To like latch onto.
Exactly. Yeah. And so like, it's interesting to me because I think that like during this period of time, you are like determined to know how you feel about things. Mm-hmm. It's like you're absolutely like rigid and I mean, maybe rigid is the wrong word, but like determined to believe in entirety because it gives you a worldview. And that worldview is sort of like something that like insulates you. It helps you feel like more comfortable as you're otherwise engaging in brand new horizons.
Right.
You know, like there's maybe not support from your elders, you know, I mean, not that ever goes away. Like, you know, if I needed to talk to mom, I could call her today and she would give me advice.
Yeah.
You know, but like maybe in the same way that like my pantry is not stocked with cereal that mom bought from the grocery store and the fridge doesn't just have milk in it.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Like that kind of thing.
Yeah. I mean, it's like very easy. Like if you're, you know, if you're, you know, entering, yeah, that early adulthood stage and you're feeling like maybe you have found like a modicum of success or like you've gotten a little bit comfortable and you feel like you are able to handle things by yourself some, to suddenly feel like, okay, great, I'm doing pretty good right now. And therefore, clearly, all of the ways that I view the world have brought me to a place of some kind of success. And therefore, all of the ways in which I view the world are the correct ways that led me here. And if other people could just see the things the way I see them, then they would, they too could experience this kind of, like, you know, joy or
yes,
whatever.
Precisely. Yeah. So it's like, it's, you know, the thing that I always go back to from that period to like of early gaming was like, I was not just sort of like transitioning from like one career path, which was doing the aquarium thing, to like newly entering this world of like content creation. And it's not just a new job, but it's also like a completely new industry and it's a new lifestyle and different skill sets and all these types of things. And then at the exact same time, I was also going through like a major breakup from like a very long-term relationship and sort of like entering like a new relationship, which was like, you know, what would go on to be like my life as it is today in a lot of capacities. And so like, I think in my like 26, 27 range is like when this hit the hardest. And the thing I always go back to is like, I was like reciting like my rules to life or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's hilarious to me that over the past decade upon reflection, that these rules to life that felt like, you know, kind of like absolutes, like the constructs, the worldview,
mm-hmm.
are like cringeworthy now.
Sure.
I'm like, you know, like for the most part, I regret expressing most of them on the internet, but the reality of them on some level as I feel like they were kind of like inevitable for my experiences. Like,
right.
I was so in a state of freefall. My worldview as I had known it had sort of like changed so rapidly that it was like, I need to invent this insulative barrier.
Right.
I need to create ways to better understand the world as it most immediately surrounds me.
Yeah, I mean, there's just so many unknowns. So if you can just build up like different pillars that are like, these are, at least I know these things.
And not just like about the world, about myself.
Right.
You know, it's like, these are things I need to know about myself. And so like, what's comical to me is like, one of them was about tattoos, which is kind of hilarious because now I have tattoos that I've gone on like spirit journeys to receive. And then this wasn't a rule to life, but I remember it was like a big part of like me in my early 20s was I was like, I hate amusement parks. I don't like going. I don't like everything to do with like, you know, the environment and, you know, like the, I don't know, like all the crappy food or whatever. And like the belief that like going on a roller coaster, like made you brave or something was like, I remember that was like something that was like a carryover, I think, from being like 12, you know, where it was,
man,
like,
I don't resonate with it at all. Yeah.
What do you mean?
Like, I mean, I don't even remember you expressing that, but like, also like, I don't think I've ever felt that way about amusement parks.
No, I know, yeah. That. Yeah, yeah. But I think in like year one Super Carlin Brothers, I may have had a video called like Toasters Are More Dangerous Than Roller Coasters. And it was like, this is what I mean from a carryover from me like being 12, but it was almost like people who were like, you know, 23-year-old me or whatever, 22-year-old me was sort of like, oh, you're not brave for going on a roller coaster. Toasters are more dangerous than roller coasters. And I'm also sort of like, dude, like, this is not like a thing. You're like, bravery is not defined by your relationship with a roller coaster.
Right.
You know, it's like, do you find them amusing or not? It's okay either way.
Right.
Like, these are not defining traits. But at that point in my life, I was like, this is something I don't like, you know? And the irony is now I'm like a vacation club owner at Disney World.
Right.
You know, I got married at Disney World.
Right. Yeah. Yes. Turns out theme parks are like sort of your thing.
So it turns out I actually really enjoy them and,
right.
you know, and only continue to enjoy them more by way of having Addison and seeing them through her eyes.
Right.
And, you know, all those types of things. So it's funny to me because these were like ironclad cornerstones of who I was for probably a 5-year span.
What would have been your Ben rule to life though? Like just don't go to amusement parks?
No, that's what I was saying was that the amusement park thing, I think, preceded the rules to life.
Okay.
So I think that was something that degraded rather quickly.
Okay.
But it was probably also during a period of time where I knew the popularity of amusement parks, but I had remarkably minimal amounts of income mm-hmm. available to really do any manner of vacation at all.
Yeah.
And so to me, I think probably what was happening was like, you would see people go and it was sort of like, well, I can't even afford to go.
Right.
You know? And so therefore like I need to dislike them that way. It doesn't feel
right.
Like,
it insulates you from like the barrier, like the real barrier,
like the fear of missing out or something.
Right. Yeah.
So it's sort of like, you know, and it's like to unpack that reality is to try to go back into a psyche and a world that has changed drastically in the past 15 years.
Right.
You know, so it's also just sort of like, I don't know how I got there, but like, you know, it's just weird to me that like the person who I was at 22 is so far from the person that I am today.
Right.
That like, it's almost as if like, if I were to meet 22-year-old me, it's like, it would be like meeting a stranger and it would be like hard to get through to them.
Right.
You know, it'd be like, what? Like, no, stop thinking that way. What a weird way to think about things.
Right.
Like, you know, like it's odd. And you know, it all varies too. Cause then like, you know, I feel like we've got, you know, like Isabel who works in office, who is 23, I think. And so like a lot of times I'm like, wow, you were a lot further along than I was at 23.
Right. Yeah.
You figured out more things a lot faster.
Sure.
Which maybe is also, you know, in part because the world has much more free flowing information and stuff like that, but I'm not really sure. She could also just be, you know, more intuitive than me.
Could be
at that age.
Yeah.
So anyway, that was just something that I was kind of reflecting on my own era of time from, you know, post college through becoming like this job, becoming like, you know, my life in a way that was like less, it's like the evolution of like when it went from like a job to a career.
Right. And,
you know?
Yeah.
So anyway, that's it.
Nice. Nice. Well, what growth you've had.
Thanks.
To like offer your own like reconstruction to your former worldviews.
Yeah. And maybe that was like a part of it too. Maybe that's like the underlying message I'm trying to say is that like, you know, in a lot of ways, I feel like I went through, and I mean, the, you know, there are certainly tons of people in my life who, you know, brought hammers. But you know, I think that like, as you reconstruct, it's almost like your identity takes a form that's more based on your own experiences and less on like what you've been like taught,
mm-hmm.
you know, and a lot of ways it's sort of like, then you start to truly become yourself, like mm-hmm. your own DNA and experiences and exposure is like much more woven into the, you know, structure than it was.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, the longer you've like, you know, been out on your own, the more you're able to, you know, discover who you are and like correct what you thought was right and what you now think is right and stuff. So, I mean, it makes sense that of course, you change a lot over the course of that, you know, time from when you were 22 to when you're whatever, how old are you? 36? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. 36. Yeah. Oh, I forget all the time.
Yeah.
It feels like it stops mattering at some point.
Oh, I know. Speaking about, I mean, it's like, you want to talk about like Isabel again, like I know she was planning her birthday party for like months leading up to it. And it's, you know, very near to mine. And I got to like, you know, February 2nd and I was like, oh my God, it's my birthday in 2 days, you know,
right,
you know,
I darn near forgot.
I almost forgot. What do you know?
Oh, I know. Well, I mean, mine is quite similar where I was born, you know, or Addison was born one day after me. And so it's just really like, it's like you get to that corner of October and it's kind of like, yeah, this is really just Addison's birthday.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. So funny. Funny how that works out.
It is indeed. It is indeed. Transition?
Transition!
Popcorn Culture is sponsored by Shopify. 300 and some odd episodes into doing the pop, and I've started to realize something about Jay and I. Not as hosts, but as people. We frequently seek the need for permission to try something new, whether it's tattoos, growing a mustache, or finally starting that Name of the Wind podcast. And while it's funny to think that I didn't realize this before, I also get it, because starting something new is terrifying. Like, we should only do it on Halloween, so at least we can, like, be on brand for the occasion, right? And when it comes to launching a new business, like, forget it. But Shopify is the tool to take you from the daydream you tell your friends you're considering over drinks to actually doing the dang thing. And if you're trying to figure out how to get the word out, no problem. Shopify helps you find your customers with easy to run email and social media campaigns. Plus, if you get stuck, not to worry. Shopify is always around with 24/7 customer support. You don't need permission. You're more capable than you think. And even if you do find something you can't do, chances are Shopify can. It's time to turn those what ifs into with Shopify today. Sign up for your $1 per month trial today at shopify.com/poppop. Again, that's shopify.com/poppop. One last time for safety, shopify.com/poppop.
The Fed's out of options. Rate cuts, money printing, balance sheet reversals. They call it policy, but it's really panic. This is in-game economics, where hope replaces discipline and the illusion of control finally breaks. They're not cutting rates because things are strong. They're cutting because the system is cracking. Inflation's eating savings. The labor market's stalling. Confidence in the dollar is fading fast. For decades, the Fed built a house of paper. Now they're striking the match that could burn it all down, leaving you to pay the price. When's the last time you actually held the wealth you've spent your life working for? My friends at Noble Gold Investments have been helping Americans move from paper wealth into real tangible assets. Numbers on a screen can disappear, but physical gold and silver, they've outlasted every crisis in history. Visit NobleGoldInvestments.com and get your free wealth protection kit today. That's NobleGoldInvestments.com for your free wealth protection kit. Discover how simple it is to protect your future.
Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals, including gold, involves risks. Consult with your tax attorney or financial professional before making an investment decision.
All right, Jay, so it says here that you took your kids the first hockey, their first hockey game.
Oh, I sure did. I sure did.
How do they love it?
Oh, man, it was, I mean, I think they enjoyed it quite a bit. It was, we've been talking about going to, like, bringing the kids to a hockey game. The Rail Yard Dogs, our local team here.
D-A-W-G-S.
D-A-W-G-S, that's right, for some time. And I was, like, looking at the tickets and, like, when I was buying them, it was like Saturday's game, tickets available, Sunday's game, tickets available if needed, meaning that Saturday's game was a playoff game and that Sunday's game would only be selling tickets if they advanced.
Right.
Right.
Yes,
so it was like, I was like, oh my gosh, if we don't go Saturday,
We
won't go until the next season starts. So I was like, that sort of forced my hand. I was like, you know what? I don't want to wait until next year. We've been talking about it. We're just going to go. So I just, I bought them on a whim. And then I just, it was like, I didn't, it was great. Cause I came home and I was like, guess what I did? I bought tickets for the family. We're going tomorrow night. Boom. Yay. Let's go.
And what was the reaction?
Oh, I mean, it was like, we didn't have anything else planned, which was like, that was the thing I was afraid of, that I looked at the calendar. I was like, there's nothing on the calendar. And I was positive I was going to get home and be like, I got tickets for tomorrow night. And Beth is going to be like, well, I've got like book club or something. Like, but it's not on the calendar. It's like, oh, I know, but they just like moved it or something. And I'd be like, oh, no.
Yeah.
No.
Well, guess what the rest of us are doing?
This is my problem, is that like I love surprises like this.
Okay.
Like I love to like surprise people with things like this. And as a result, I then don't always, yeah, that means, you know, I didn't check with Beth ahead of time to be like, hey, what do you think? Should we do it?
Right.
You know, because to me, the half the fun is literally that moment when you get to be like, guess what?
We're doing this thing.
We're doing this thing. Yeah, it's already taken care of. It's done. We're taking the kids. So we don't even have to worry about like a babysitter. It'll be great. But it was fun. We got there and, Well, actually, on the ride over, we had a bit of a snafu where Luke was so excited that we were going to the game. He went and, like, he found some, like, cardboard in the garage, and he, like, made this sign to, like, bring and hold up at the game.
Oh, my gosh.
I know.
Okay. That's, I mean, it's kind of cool that he got there on his own.
Oh, I know. He was just like, oh, my God, I have to bring a sign. And he, like, went and he, you know, it was like a whole little art project, and he drew out the bubble letters, and he wanted to look at the logo to try and draw, like, the mascot on one of the sections of it. And I would say it came out fairly good, which is saying something, because it's not an easy to draw logo.
No, I was gonna say it's a pretty, like, complex image of, like, the dog wearing, like, a rail yard cap.
Yeah, it's not easy to draw, but it came out pretty good. But then, like, we all got in the car, and we were, like, you know, on the highway, you know, 3 minutes from the venue, and it was realized that the sign had been left at home. And it was devastating, because it was like, we can't really turn around.
Oh,
and I'm so
no.
sorry. And
it's like you have to understand that I fully appreciate all the energy and enthusiasm you put into it. I'm so proud of you for that. But also,
like, yeah, we can't turn around. Like, we don't have time. And like, I so badly wish we had remembered, and like, we didn't, and it's just going to be painful now. So that was unfortunate.
Yeah, that would do it.
Yeah, that wasn't great. But either way, we got our seats, and, you know, we went through, and we don't have any rail yard dogs gear at all. So we went to, like, the little gift shop, and everyone got to pick something out. And, you know, Nick and Nate got, like, the little mini hockey sticks, and they were waving those the whole game.
Can't mess with those.
I know. And Luke was torn. He wanted either this, like, dog's plushie, or he, like, right up at the counter, they had these signed hockey pucks by the different players on the team.
Pretty cool.
Yeah, pretty cool. And they'd been out there watching them warm up. And I guess Luke has maybe talked to, like, some of his friends who have gone to some of the games or whatever. And he's like, number 38's my favorite player. And I was just like, if you say so. I mean, you've literally never seen them play before.
Right, you know? Right. And this is not televised.
This isn't televised.
To my knowledge.
Yeah, these are, like, I mean, fair, super minor league hockey here. But if you say so, man. Like, and then we get up there, and sure enough, one of the hockey pucks is signed by number 38. And he's like, oh, man, I really want the puck or whatever. And he was like having such a dilemma, like, should I get the signed puck, or should I get the plush? And it was like, your choice. And thankfully, we had a very good sales lady at the cashier. And she was just like, oh, man, who signed that puck? She's like, oh, he's really good. And he's like, okay, I want the puck. Yeah. Got that. So we got the side hockey puck.
Amazing.
Oh, amazing. It came with, like, a little plastic case, which, you know, so you could, like, put it on display. Of course, he took it out of the case immediately.
Oh, man,
and
nice.
It's just like, you know, I was like, okay, no, whatever. Just enjoy it. Just enjoy your hockey puck. That's super good.
Hockey pucks are, like, nice, though.
I
mean, like, you know, I know it's just, like, a thick piece of rubber. But,
yeah.
Like, there's something, like, gratifying about the heft.
Yeah. There absolutely is. I used to, when I worked at said venue, you know, at the concert venue, which is where the railroad dogs play.
Right.
Every now and then I would have to go into the stadium, and there was, like, a point where we were redoing the seats in the Coliseum, and I would go check on the camera, because we were doing, like, a big time lapse over, like, the course of a month. And so I would have to, like, go up and check in the catwalk and make sure everything was, like, still running appropriately.
Uh-huh.
But you could, like, very frequently find just, like, rogue hockey pucks in the stands from, like, where, like, the Virginia Tech hockey team had accidentally sent them sailing over the, like, net or the goal or whatever, and they just landed in the stands.
Oh, wow.
And so
okay.
I had just, like, a little stack of hockey pucks I would collect and just always, like, put another one on the stack when I wanted to go check the camera.
That's awesome. That's really cool. I'm shocked that, I mean, maybe there's just not that many people in attendance or something, but I'd be shocked that, like, they would be getting thwacked out there and then not, like, picked up by...
I think it'd be more from, like, practices.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they'd just sort of, be left up there then. So lots of hockey pucks back there. But yeah, we went where the game started, you know, they play the music and everyone's coming out and their lights are flashing and that's all good. And the dogs are doing pretty good. They ended up winning the game 6-0, but In this was so great, and it made me so glad that Luke picked the hockey puck, because the very first goal scored was by number 38.
I'm already a fan.
I know. I was just like, oh my gosh, Gustav is his name.
Nice.
Yeah. So he's known as, I guess his nickname is just Goose.
Goose.
You
know,
as you might think. Yeah. Yeah. So Gustav, number 38, Rally Our Dogs. What's up? Can't believe it. I was like, man, that worked out well. That he had this like dilemma, and then the guy actually scored the first goal. And I was like, that was awesome. Like, what a moment.
That's like magic.
I know. Unfolding. It was like, way to go, Goose. Way to go. We ended up leaving after the second period because like the game didn't start until like 7, and typically bedtime is like, you know, around, we start going around like 7:30-ish, you know?
Yes.
Yeah. So by the end of the second period, we're like well past bedtime, and people were starting to get a little cranky and stuff. And we're like, I don't think we have another 18-minute intermission here, plus the third period, plus sitting in traffic, getting out of the venue, and all that. So we've had moose after there. But when I checked the score the next morning, Goose had scored again.
No.
Yes. So he scored 2 goals out of the 6. So the cashier was not lying. He is quite good.
It sounds like it.
Especially
because this is like a playoff game.
I know. So they did advance, I guess. I haven't kept up to see if they're still alive. I think they could have only played one more game, so they probably are still alive at this point.
In fact, I have also checked because you told me it was like playoff period, and so I was sort of like, well, I kind of want to see.
Maybe we should go. Yeah, maybe we should go again. Yeah.
I'm sort of into it now.
Check out the dogs.
Right, a little fair weather fan situation going on. End of the season. Why not go?
Exactly. To that end, the Masters were this weekend. I don't know when people are listening to this. I think we're recording it a little bit early. So, as we're recording it, the Masters were last weekend.
Yes. Right. Yes.
Yeah. But the Masters is about the only golf I watch all year, and for some reason, it really just captures my attention. It just feels like the stakes are high, and it just feels like yes. This is exciting. I can watch this and get into it.
That's like me with World Cup soccer or the Tour de France.
It's
sort of like all of a sudden I'm a super fan.
I am into it. Let's go.
Yeah.
And I can't believe I didn't turn it on earlier, but it got to be like 6:30 at night, and Beth was like, who won the Masters? And I was like, oh my gosh, I didn't turn it on. I felt so dumb. And I was like, you know what? It might still be on. And I like flip it on, and sure enough, it is still on. And I mean, just barely is it still on. It is the 18th hole, and just the final two people are playing, which was like Rory McIlroy and someone else who was ever his partner for the day.
Yeah.
And it's just like, but even that, I was just like, this is why I love the Masters, because I could turn it on, catch literally the last 15 minutes of this coverage, and I'm invested. It's like, okay, I immediately get it. Rory McIlroy is ahead by 2 strokes going into the 18th hole. As long as he doesn't double bogey, he will win the Masters. He tees off, boom, shanks it into the woods, and you're like, the drama is here. Let's go.
Now we're in it.
It felt impossible that he could lose being 2 strokes up with 1 hole to go, but now he's in the woods. Who knows what's going to happen? Turns out he got a par anyway and won the Masters. So, you know, it was good.
It was good. Yeah. Well, so this is, I mean, I have like such a vague connection to it because I watched literally none of it. But
yeah,
we went to dinner with like Alice's sister and my brother-in-law, Mike, you know, so we talk about it all the time. But we were at this restaurant called McAdoo's in Salem, Virginia.
Just to be there.
Yeah. And, you know, we were just like having like an evening, you know, pitcher of beer and kind of doing like our cheers and stuff like
that.
They had like one of the jukeboxes where you could like go through and download the app. And so we were playing like, you know, 2 McAdoo's were playing like K-pop Demon Hunter. And
were you?
Yes.
That's so funny. I was like, I want to go there because all I would play is Blackpink songs and people would be like, what is this?
I did play Mantra by Blackpink.
Jenny. Yeah.
By Jenny. I'm sorry. Yeah. Yes. Solo album.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So anyway, yeah. So
also a great song on that album, Solo.
Yeah. Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we were all just having like a really great time. And then at the same time, the like women's NCAA like Final Four game was on, where it was like South Carolina versus UConn.
Yeah.
And so like I'm looking at the game, and just to add stakes to literally nothing, I was sort of like, guys, who do you think is gonna win? You know, because it's like a giant like screen right next to us or whatever. So my sister-in-law Sammy and I were like, all right, all in on South Carolina or whatever. And so I was like, all right, let's get
over UConn.
Over UConn.
No. No. South Carolina.
South Carolina. What?
No. Oh, no, I can't root for South Carolina.
No. Okay. Okay.
Yeah, I'm afraid not.
They won. So,
well, you know, I wasn't rooting for them.
Snapped UConn's, like, I don't know, like 65 game winning streak or something like that.
That's hilarious. That's hilarious.
But so
was this the title game?
Final four.
Yeah. Okay.
So,
okay.
Yeah. So, but basically then I pulled up like one of the, I've got like Robinhood or whatever that I use for like basically nothing, but it has like the little prediction market type thing built into it. And so I was sort of like, okay, I have like $2.99 of weird dividends paid from a stock. I have no idea that like, you know, what it was, whatever. So
right.
It's like $2.99 going all in on South Carolina.
Boom. Which,
like, because UConn's won so many games in a row, it was like a fairly decent odds. Or whatever.
Okay.
So it yielded me like $14.
Wow.
I know. I was really excited. Yeah.
That is a pretty good one.
From $2.99 to $14.
Very fun fact about these two schools, UConn and USC. So one of my old bosses, when I worked at the concert venue, went to the University of South Carolina, USC.
Okay.
Which everyone knows is like not the real USC. That's the University of Southern California.
Sure.
They are all those South Carolina, all the Gamecock fans. Oh my gosh. They're the worst. No, they're not really.
I'm getting way too in the weeds. Just go ahead.
No, what were you going to say?
I was just going to say the like very famous Virginia Tech head coach, Frank Beamer, his son is the head coach for South Carolina.
I know. That is a nice little dagger I can throw at them at this point.
There you go. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But one of my old bosses who I did not like was he went there, and so he was a big Gamecocks fan, and it was so annoying all the time.
I see.
Yeah.
Is that why you don't like them?
It's exactly why I don't like them.
Wow. Nice.
Yes.
Is that part of your worldview?
I mean, not really. Like, I wouldn't really hold it against you if you were a Gamecocks fan. But, in general, that's the reason why I would root against them.
Nice.
It's like, at least it would move the needle a little bit for me.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
I see. There's got to be at least one person who's, like, a Gamecocks alumni, like, currently listening.
Absolutely. And we'll see. This was the other thing, was that one thing that the University of South Carolina is extremely well known for is people majoring in event management and event marketing. So a lot of people in the company that I used to work for went to South Carolina.
I see.
And like they would go there specifically like with this career path in mind because it is a good launching point. And indeed, their school fell under our purview. They were managed by the company. So actually, I've been to the University of South Carolina. We had like a whole market region, like marketing conference there. It was pretty cool, honestly. All things considered.
Go figure.
It was great.
I bet
met some nice people, still friends with some of them.
Yes. I suspect that, you know, most universities kind of gorgeous, you know.
Yeah. On the flip side, once upon a time, I was also applying for a job, though, at UConn, which was also managed by our company.
I got you.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, which I did not get. But I will also say that, like, as I was applying for this job, it was like, if you get the job, obviously I was going to have to move to Connecticut or whatever, which I did not want to do.
Right. Yes.
But it was like,
that would have changed our lives a lot.
It would have changed our lives a lot, right. And it was like the sort of the situation I found myself in was that I had been at the same position at the same venue for like 3 to 4 years at this point. And like the way the company wants you to advance through it is to kind of be at a spot for like 2-ish years and then either get like promoted position wise into a smaller venue and then work your way back up to a bigger venue, or like just move at like a similar position up to a bigger venue or whatever.
Right. That makes sense. Yeah.
So that's like what they want you to be doing. And if you're like not really making moves to do that, they'll just sort of be like, you clearly don't care about this kind of situation. Like, we don't really need to keep you around if you're not interested in advancing kind of situation. You know what I mean?
So it's like if you like, they don't want like a career person at like venue X.
Right. Right.
Like they don't want you to come in and just like set up your life and stay there forever.
Right. They don't want you to do that. So the idealist position for me would to have just been promoted within the venue I was at, but that position just wasn't like moving very much, at least when I was in this position to be like ready for it. So I like had to like position, like I had to like be clearly making an effort to advance, but also not really wanting to, you know.
I see. That is a strange position to be in. But also, like, what are people in event marketing doing about like settling down at all?
Well, that's, I mean, when I went to that first marketing conference at USC, it was abundantly clear what their hiring process or strategy was, which was to hire tons of people straight out of college who were not anchored anywhere solely for the purpose of being able to shuffle them around
Lot
it's in like this exact way.
A lot of people are going to want, you know, get them their first like 8 to 10 years of experience before they throw roots somewhere.
Right.
And at that point in time, they're ready to GM or something.
And if you promote them inside the company and move them around, then once you've moved someone to a different spot, then like they have to like rediscover their life. And the thing that's consistent from X to B, from A to B, is their company, not their friends or family or anything.
Sure.
So then it's become like I feel like it would make you more like embedded within the company culture.
Ah,
and stuff like that.
Become part of your worldview.
Yeah, it becomes maybe more part of you. Like, okay, I'm more invested in this because this is what's consistent. I don't really know what to do in this new city, but I know I am spending most of my time at work anyway.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yes.
Yeah. The people who are the same are the people who are on the calls, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. We have familiarity because I've always had Janet.
Yeah.
You know, from Tampa.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Also Kansas City / also Tulsa. Yeah.
I mean, wildly effective, I have to say, for most of the people. Although I think the people I would still like think of as friends are not still in the company. So
outside. Maybe your kinship was toward the people who were like, this is never going
to
be me.
Let me give a shout out to one of them. Guy named Chase. Great guy. Chase Old Sport. That's what every time I communicate with him, that's how we refer to each other.
Old Sport.
Old Sport. Chase Old Sport. And
you're like a very like Ernie McMillan DA lag.
It is very much like that. I'm going to look. We're going to give him a shout out right here. Hold on. Let me get the handle correct.
You're getting Chase Old Sport right here at the moment.
We're getting. Okay. It is going to be. Look, you need to go and it will enrich your life. I promise you. Go check out his Instagram. Okay. He's not featured in it. It is like a faceless Instagram account. It is called Half Cut Challenge. That's it. Half Cut Challenge. Every single day, it is the same style video over and over where there are two scales on the screen and an object and a knife. And he will slice the object in half and then weigh both halves. And the goal is to get both halves to weigh the same. That's the whole video. It takes like 10 seconds. And every single day, as soon as the apple pops up, I'm like, today's the day. Today's the day. Is it going to be even today? And it never is.
It never is.
And sometimes I swear he's trolling. It'll be like, there is such an obvious line down the middle. And it'll be like, going to the side.
Yeah, right.
It'll be like, what are you doing? No.
Oh, we can't let the gimmick die.
Why didn't you slice it horizontally? He's got like 14,000 followers. So like some of them like catch on a little bit, but it's so easy to watch them because they're so fast. So if you want to go check out Chase's Instagram, Half Cut Challenge, it's super fun. Let them know that I sent you.
Yeah. And like all the comments are going to be like, anyone here from Popcorn Culture?
I know. Tell them, this is how you can tell. Say, we want the Half Cut Soft Pretzel. That's what we want. We want Soft Pretzel.
That like what you've been like vying for?
That's what I want to see on Half Cut Challenge, is Soft Pretzel.
Soft Pretzel.
Yeah.
What kind of like a Snyder's?
Like, I mean, whatever brand, you know.
Oh, any brand.
I mean, pretzel's such a weird shape. It'd be so hard to get it half cut, you know.
You're right.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying.
So tell me your strategy here. So if you're Half Cut Challenging a pretzel, like, do you think you'd like eye it up? Would you just cut straight through the center, like right through the middle, like knot piece? Or like, would you like go diagonally unexpectedly and then sort of be like, okay, like there's more like bottom, but then there's like more beef at the top?
I mean, to me, I know you'd really have to assess it because to me, regular pretzels are pretty symmetrical anyway.
With the two little
knobs on the top.
And like the bottom triangle / baseball prism.
There's
or
that
whatever.
Like, yeah, there's the middle diamond. There's the middle triangle and then the two loopy boops all around the bottom.
Loopy boops.
Yeah, exactly. We all know what pretzels look like.
Right,
come on.
We should write a textbook on pretzels.
Yeah, we should.
Anatomically correct illustrations.
Right. And so, I mean, you'd feel like it has to be right down the middle, but there's almost no way that's going to, like, I mean, that's probably your best bet. But what if you went horizontal, you know?
That's what I mean. Yeah. It's like, I mean,
maybe go horizontal.
It seems like, how much, do you go above the knot? Do you go below the knot? Like, I mean, because it's like there's like a long strand across the bottom, but it feels like more roundy material around the, what'd you call them? Whoopy boops?
Yeah. Loopy boops.
Loopy boops.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. This is why I need to see Half Cut Challenge. Check on Soft Pretzel. Also, I like carrot is an interesting one to do. Right?
Carrot is interesting because it's like long and pointy.
It's long and pointy. So it's like you can't cut it down what feels like the middle because obviously the one side is thicker and the one side is thinner.
Right.
So you got to cut like way closer to the thick side if you want them to even out, you know?
Well, like a 2/3 cut.
Right. Exactly. You need like a 2/3 cut for a carrot.
All right. I have to tell you, I'm already heavily invested in this concept.
I know. Yeah, I know. So there you go. If you want to go check out Half Cut Challenge, you know. Ask for soft pretzel.
I wonder if he's ever cut the apple in half, put up like both sides, and it's like exactly like 223 grams or whatever. And he's like, yeah, the gimmick's over if I do it. So.
No, he got one the other day. It wasn't an apple. It was like, I don't even know. Maybe it was like a peep. But he actually got one correct, and I was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe it. This is the first time they've gotten one completely accurate, because it goes down to like a hundredth of like a gram or something. So it's pretty precise, but it was exciting. But they don't only do apples. There's like Rice Krispies, carrots, gummy bears, sourdough, yeah, peeps,
okay.
Kit Kats.
Mm-hmm. Kit Kat feels like,
because that one's like...
There's a line.
Well, there's a line. You could just break it down, but he chops it. Perpendicular to the line, and then it's like, no, it hurts. Why would you do that?
You can't do it. I mean, this was like, I think that like, I don't know why I was thinking about this like just this morning, but like, I feel like my first intro to viral videos may have been like pre-YouTube, and one of the big like series I would watch was Will It Blend, which was this like super industrious blender. They would put like golf balls or like compact discs or like an entire broomstick handle or and they would just keep like putting stuff into the blender,
right?
Seeing if it would
will it blend. Like, what happens when you put X in blender?
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, and it was like, I was like, oh my gosh, gold mine. Like this is it. And then like, you know, as I got older, I found like the hydraulic press videos where it's like, you know, put a hydraulic press on anything.
Yeah.
You know, like a stack of erasers. And it's like, what does happen?
What happens?
Play-Doh.
How do they squish?
How does it squish?
Yeah.
I need to know.
Yeah. Things react really differently to being squished.
Yeah. But this I feel like, for like, if I had like early YouTube ambitions, it would have been to discover this kind of concept.
Right.
You know, and so that, like, Chase Old Boy.
Yeah. Old Sport.
Old Sport. Sorry. Yeah. Oh, my bad. What Chase Old Sport has found is like, wow, look at you. You've unlocked it. No wonder you were in marketing.
Exactly. I know. So there's been times where I'm like, we need a marketing person. I'd be like, I wonder if Chase would work here.
Ooh, yeah. Where's he located these days? Jacksonville?
No, not Jacksonville. I don't even know. I think I think he works at like Legoland or something. So I don't think we would. I don't think we could tempt him away.
He works at Legoland.
I know. That's the thing. He was also very good at his job. So.
Well, that tracks. That tracks. Yeah. I mean, he sounds like a creative lad.
Yeah, no doubt.
I'm also envious of all of the attendees of the event marketing major at the University of South Carolina for having their crap together enough to know that they wanted to do event marketing and went to a school that specialized in it on purpose.
That was mind blowing to me.
Yes.
As when I initially got hired, my boss was like, she was quickly let go. But then the next guy who was hired, who was my boss for a long time, like he was one of those guys. He went to college specifically to pursue venue management. And I was like, what? How did you even come across it? Like, how was this introduced to you as an idea for a job?
Well,
you know,
I mean, going back to the, like, you taking Luke and Nick and Nate to the Rail Yard Dogs game, it's sort of like, on some level, would you ever be like, okay, Luke, there, like, you know, there is somebody whose job it is, it used to be mine, who like puts together this, you know, like,
right?
Like, you get to walk around and like know all the ins and outs and the secret hallways and the distant tunnels and the,
right,
you know, like where the pucks are on after Virginia Tech hockey practice and stuff like that. You know,
you
like,
could mess up your knees on your lunch hour running the stairs in this room.
You could. You know? Yeah. Like, I mean, someone needs to.
Someone did. It was me.
It was you. Yeah. So like, I mean, maybe it's just like one of those things like where like people who go to events and they're like looking around, they're taking it in and they're sort of, it's like, it's not even like the players. It's like the production.
Right.
You know, it's sort of like all of these people came here to be a part of this.
It's like on some level, if you are the, you know, the GM or whatever of your city's like largest concert venue or whatever sports arena, whatever it is, like, especially here, because like if you're, you know, if you're the GM of like a professional sporting place, it's just sort of like, yeah, obviously people are invested because people love sports.
Yeah.
But like while I was working there, it was like, we didn't have a sports team, you know?
Right. Like, right. Yes. Yes. So like just like concerts and
it's just like concerts and stuff. So what you're then sort of like cultivating is what acts can you bring to the area, and the different kind of acts that you're able to bring in kind of like help like one, you're providing like tourism and like a genuine economic boost into the city,
right?
When you bring in big acts, and you're sort of setting the tone for what kind of things are like culturally relevant in the city, you know, week to week or
at
whatever.
This time. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So it's like an oddly like influential arm, even though you might not think of it that way.
Yeah, you might not think of it that way, and of course, you're also a little bit at the mercy of your own population, like. You know, we would get requests all the time for people like, you know, bring more rock and roll. And it'd be like, I mean, like you say that, but you're very loud about it. But then when we do, no one comes. You know?
right. Yes,
so,
it's like,
you know, it's like, you wonder why we keep bringing in country acts. And it's because they keep selling out. You know?
Right. Yep. Yeah. I mean, it is. I mean, it's very interesting. Although on the flip side, this is like one of the, I think it's like one of the funniest anecdotes. But like when we started, you know, doing the Through the Griffin tour, we got like tons of messages from people in the Midwest to be like, please come to the Midwest. And then we went to the Midwest and people came out.
They did.
And it was sort of like, okay, it wasn't just the
wasn't
few,
just
the
loud,
the extreme.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. It was the many, the loud, the extreme.
Right. So shout out to the Midwest.
Shout out to the Midwest. What up?
Also just kind of shout out to everybody, because it really is amazing how like much support, like it's like one of those, it's so funny because we're doing like the Richmond show, and I am like absolutely convinced that nobody's going to come to the Richmond show because it's so close to our home, and it's almost like the only way for anyone to actually care about who we are is for them to be like in some far-flung place. And I don't know why I think that,
right?
You know, but it's like, it's just, it's so unusual and weird, but also like the most wonderful experience and discovery of doing this job. It's like just to get to go there, it's like it literally is like sustaining,
right?
You know, like it gives me sustenance,
yeah,
you know, until the next one,
right?
Which is great. Yeah. So anyway, again, I know that we started off with a little tour plug there, but you know, if you guys are at all interested in coming to see us, we're going to be in the Northeast of the United States in September. So links to all that are available at supercarlinbrothers.com/events. supercarlinbrothers.com/events.
Did you have more to your like gambling story? I totally cut you off with my rant about USC.
That's okay. I basically was going to say that I like got my $14 or whatever from the South Carolina win, and then I was just like sitting on the screened in porch with Alice, and we were like, you know, having a like sipping like a burble, as we like to call them, just a bourbon ginger.
Yeah.
But you know, we were sitting there discussing, and I like was like, oh yeah, look, I got like the notification that like the money came through or whatever. And I was like, so I got $14, and I was like burning a hole in my pocket right away. So
wow.
I was like, what else is happening? And then Robin Hood was like, the Masters. And I was like, Sure. And so Rory, I think this was like the Saturday if it ended on a Sunday or whatever, you know, Friday if it ended on a Saturday.
Yeah.
But I was like, yeah, I'll go all $14 in on Rory. And then I went up to $19.
Wow.
And I was like, yeah.
Crushing it.
So guys, I don't mean to like, you know, overshare or anything, but I have $19.
You got a bit of a hot streak going.
A bit of a hot streak.
Nice.
The old hot hand.
The old hot hand, as it were.
Right, but it can never go wrong. Like from this point forward, I will only succeed, right? Like
that's how
this works.
Yeah, exactly. That's that is definitely, I think, how gambling works. in terms of people losing it all.
In terms of getting you enticed. Yes, right. Yes, indeed. So anyway, no, I will happily step away. I'm all good. I'm all good. Anyway, though, if you guys have any feedback for the show, you can send it over to popcornculturepod@gmail.com. Or if you'd like to support the show, you can at patreon.com/popcornculture. Links to all those things, again, as well as those tour dates in the description down below or in the show notes. Otherwise, until next time.
Pop, pop.
Today's episode was edited by Isabel Chrisley. Vaishawn Brandon does our art. Catherine Stein is our production manager, and the show is hosted by me and Jonathan Carlin.